people often ask me, what is your favourite race course? Sorry, hello, Cornelius here. Cornelius Leiser, hope you're well. Welcome. Just saying that people often ask me what my favourite race course is, and I think maybe one or two are a bit surprised at the answer. They're expecting, I don't know, Ascot or York or Newmarket July meeting or Cheltenham or Aintree, but that's not the answer from me. 59 race courses, now Toaster has closed, and I certainly used to like Toaster. 59 race courses, and to be fair, I'm not sure there's a single one that I don't enjoy some aspect of. For years, I would have said Hereford, but then in 1993, I made my first ever visit to the course that has become my favourite course. I'll give you a clue. It's located on the banks of the River Tay. It's in Scone Palace Park. It's Britain's most northerly track. It's in Scotland, and it is Perth. What I would call a heady combination of picturesque position, good quality action, and a real party atmosphere. People really just determined to enjoy themselves as well. The Racing Post once described it as a little pit of heaven. And I'm really pleased that for the Cornelius cast this week, Hazel Poplinski, who is the chief executive of Perth, is able to be with us. I bet you get it when I talk about heady combination of picturesque and beautiful and this, that and the other.
I think you're so right, Cornelius. I think when you say Perth, it just makes people smile. And that's, you can't say much more than that. It's all about fun. And I think the fact that people stay overnight, it becomes one big party. I was taken there by my parents in my childhood. My first job in racing was there as the PRO, looking after that mad press room. And I was so, so pleased to be brought back there so many years later, 2016. And I've been the chief executive there since. And it's been a very happy time.
And, you know, I've talked about some of those other race courses. People talk about Cheltenham as picturesque. Of course it is. And Ascot is famous. And York is this, that and the other. But, you know, the fact is that you're in the middle of somebody's rather grand, Scone Palace Park, rather grand back garden, really, aren't you?
Well, it makes for a great setting, though, doesn't it? And I think those, we enjoy fantastic crowds. And I think they really feel they've had an authentic day out in the countryside in beautiful setting. And it just adds to the atmosphere. I think most of the British racecourses you just spoke about there have a fantastic backdrop. But I do have Perth is one of my favourite, absolutely one of my favourite. At any time of year, you can walk the track down to the River Tay. It looks different every day, but it's always a complete joy.
There always been stories of, was there a story of a starter, I think? A race starter who was starting races by the River Tay, and he used to go and have a bit of fishing in between, see if he could catch a salmon.
Yeah, there's Johnny Leach. Johnny
really?
Leach. And I think, it didn't end that well because he was so busy, he had a fish on his hook, on his line, probably on a fly, actually, I should say. It must have been a fly because he'd have been a proper fisherman. And it was very, very exciting trying to catch this thing. So he was running a little bit late. And so he ran up and saw a few jockeys ready to go. And he just set the race off because he knew he was about 7 minutes after time. But unfortunately, there were still three or four horses making their way to the start. So it didn't end well.
Yeah, but it is. I'm just going to drive our listeners down from the moment. So you go past the city of Perth or town of Perth? City? Is it a city?
It's a city. It is a city.
You go past the city of Perth. Well, this is assuming you're coming from the south. And then you go up a main road and you turn off to... There used to be some... The stables used to be on the main road, didn't they? But they've been flattened and modernised in the racecourse now.
Absolutely. 2016 was their first year of opening and made such a difference to everybody who takes part there and came with it. A lovely lodge for the stable staff. So much more convenient. But yeah, you're quite right. Front gates of the palace had the stables on the other side of the road.
Yeah, they looked... I've never been inside because you had to be authorised, but they didn't necessarily look the smartest in recent years. So that's a big, big improvement. Then you go up further up the main road, then you turn off to the left. And basically, you wiggle your way. Do you know how far it is from the main road down to the racecourse? It's about a mile, is it?
Yeah, not even half a mile. But you're quite right. It can be very, very icy in the winter. And you're pretty lucky if you don't see a bit of roadkill. There's always rabbits, hares, deer, pheasants. It's quite joyous when you come in. It certainly is.
Yeah, one friend of mine says he imagines pheasant pie is always on the menu because there seem to be pheasants there all the time.
Yeah. And the palace grounds, they have peacocks, so you have to keep your eyes open.
And obviously in the summer it's beautiful. Is it quite, you talk about icy in the winter, does it get pretty rough there in the winter?
Yeah, when I first arrived, in my first month, I think it never really got light and it rained the whole time and onto the roof of the office. And I thought, what is this? It literally never got light. It's definitely not a winter course. I think Sam Moorehead, my predecessor, did brilliantly developing a fixture list that starts in April, as you know, at the end of the core national hunt season, enjoys some fantastic weekend fixture slots during the summer, and then ends with a glorious finale in September. But it could not have thrived through the winter due to the very heavy soil. And as I say, it never really got light until about March.
And the end of April is this Perth Festival. I always joke that I'm a desperately, desperately small time, tiny slice of a racehorse type of owner, but people have the Cheltenham Festival and the Aintree Festival and the Punchestown Festival, but I have the Perth Festival, because Sam Moorehead, who you mentioned, who was a distinguished jump jockey, then racecourse administrator, he developed this 3 days, didn't he, at the end of April, which does feel, it feels like probably the most genuine racing festival in a way, because obviously you've got racing, but you've got good racing, and then you've got the party atmosphere. So it does feel, people aren't necessarily intense in the middle of the race course, but apart, and we're not up to our knees in mud, hopefully. But apart from that, it does feel like a festival. It would be recognised by concert goers as a festival, I think, in some respects.
I think so. And it's one of the higher quality cards that we have through the whole season. So he had a beautiful blend of that. And of course, because his mates were those other ex-jockeys like Nigel Twiston, Davis, Philip Hobbs, Kim Bailey. I mean, they would bring good, good horses. And then with them, good owners, good jockeys. So there was a calibre about it. It was, as a child, when my parents used to take me there, you knew there was an aura about the actual racing. And then, as you say, when I was in my 20s and had my first job there, you never really had the Thursday or the Friday of the festival. In those days, it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, though. But Wednesday and Thursday was nearly a blur because, of course, you'd stayed up all night partying. So it was managing the hangover and managing to get your job done. But you knew everybody you saw was in the same boat. So it was was a stamina and endurance test. But oh, the memories are fantastic. When anyone says Perth, they start to smile and they've always got a Perth story. And you've got some of the best, I think, Cornelius.
Well, and I'll tell you what, it improved my spelling no end when I went to Perth, because I worked out how to spell Kaylee. Because C-E-I-L-D-H, is it? Does that sound right? Yeah. And I remember, you know, there was a hotel up the Glasgow Road that the Kaylee took place in. And I'm not sure whether licensing hours were...
Salutation. It still goes, actually. The Sally.
Yeah, the Sally was a pub in the middle. And I don't think I'm being particularly indiscreet, but what was famous about the Sally was that all the floorboards creaked. And there were quite a lot of jockeys determined to enjoy themselves, dare I say.
Yeah.
And everyone knew roughly what was going on, because if you tried to passage creep, it was creak, creak, creak in the salutation. I used to stay in the Royal George. Is it the Royal George or the Royal William?
Yeah,
Royal George.
Yep.
Well, there might have been some passage creeping, but the corridors didn't creak in quite the same way as the salutation.
Well, I know we're joking now, but honestly, what Perth has brought to the city through economic impact, I think it's measured somewhere around 12 million a year.
What, from the racecourse?
The racecourse alone and the associated industries around a day at the races. So it is phenomenal. And of course, this year has been absolutely the opposite of everything that Perth is for mass gatherings. It's not a good business to be in during a lockdown.
What is the score then? So you are ready to roll again, aren't you?
Yeah, we've been given a date. Just yesterday, the First Minister announced that professional sport can resume. So that is fantastic. Of course, the BHA had already allocated us provisional fixtures. And so Scotland gets underway on Monday at Ayr Racecourse, which is very exciting.
So what's that, the
22nd.
And when does Perth come under starters orders? Pun entirely intended.
Yeah, 21st of July, and we have two further ones in August, the 11th and the 30th of August. And normally we're always promoting these fixtures avidly to all the public, but of course, because they're behind closed doors, it's a very, very different scenario and just an essential stepping stone to get the industry going, of course. And we've seen it so successfully happening in England and especially at Royal Ascot this week.
Well, I was about to say, I can't imagine Perth behind closed doors and with people not being able to be there to cheer. But having said that, I couldn't really imagine Royal Ascot behind closed doors with no one being able there to be there to cheer. And it's coped pretty, I think racing's coped well, Ascot's coped well, people, enthusiasts have coped well. People cope, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. At the time when they said that jump racing should wait behind the more important flat racing because of all the three-year-olds, the breeding priorities, getting these classics off, because you can't really ever restage those in a future year. And they held racing back for jumping until the 1st of July. That meant an extra two cancellations at that stage for us, including our Gold Cup. And I could see the sense in it, but I also felt that's going to be really, really difficult for jump racing. And so our start isn't till the 21st of July. But hopefully by then, everyone's had plenty of time to get their horses fit. And I agree to set off for all the way from the people normally who would support us, the right down Lambourne, even deeper, the Bowen family in Wales. It's a long old haul. Hopefully we will have overnight accommodation available for them. But without a crowd, I kind of feel it's a little bit cold-blooded, actually, as it's not Perth, but it's an essential stepping stone we all have to take. And the thing that will make it worthwhile for them is the track is looking absolutely stunning.
Well, because you haven't raced on it since September.
Well, I know. I don't think the grand staff ever want a race meeting on it ever again.
It's like a carpet, is it?
It is like a carpet. All the grass is so thick. It's just absolutely wonderful. So hopefully, we've got six identified fixtures just now in the 2020. We might get a few extra, but I think the benefit of that will still be there with us in 2021. When fingers crossed, Cornelius, let's hope we have something like a normal festival next year and we can get the crowds back in, because it doesn't give me a buzz until we have the crowds that that's what we do at Perth. We export fun, quite literally. And if we haven't got a crowd, there's a massive missing ingredient there for me. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, but obviously let's hope Perth's back to normal in 2021. Let's hope the world is back to some kind of normality. I heard John Gosden on the radio say this sinister disease, and it is bizarre. I suppose in terms of flat racing over jumping, the flat racing they needed to get going, as you say, because the whole sport is based around the classics, which will be taking place. And I suppose the other thing was that jumping at least continued until nearly the Aintree and the Perth festivals and the Punchestown festivals. And also, clearly, jump racing is more hazardous for people involved than flat racing, and they didn't want the NHS to be clogged up with, you know, unnecessarily when it has other things to worry about.
Yeah, I think they have to take that all that perception into account, and it's very true. And you didn't want to put a jockey at risk either if he happens to break a limb or something and have to go to hospital. So there was a lot of sense in it, but it just makes the recovery process for Perth particularly difficult, because it looks like now we probably wiped out any opportunity of a crowd this year. Still holding out a little bit of hope for September, and then if we were to manage to get an extra fixture in October, that would also be good. But in terms of things like hospitality, which is a massive source of income for us, very popular, that's gone by the board in a whole year. And it wasn't on our risk register. When you do your cash flows, you might expect to lose one abandonment. I haven't actually had any since I've been there in the four seasons. So we were getting a bit blasé, and we had fantastic record sales for advanced ticket sales for 2020. And we're in the process of refunding them all, which is a bit galling, because we're up to our 12th fixture now. And that is literally hundreds and thousands of pounds worth. So it's a big process to do.
So you say your 12th fixture?
Yeah, 12th fixture. We've only got the September one still surviving, if you like. So 12 fixtures have been abandoned for which we sold tickets in advance. So that's a big process, especially when most of my team is furloughed.
Right.
But we have been incredibly heartened, Cornelius, because we are giving them the option to either get a full refund to which they're entitled, or to ask for a transfer to the equivalent fixture in 2021. and a very high proportion have done that, which is a real nod to our confidence of the future of Perth. And it's every single ticket that does that, it's a massive help to our cash flow.
Yeah. I love you just use an expression a minute ago, we export fun. I think that's a great expression. You can call it, your memoirs when they come out, which will be racy, I know, could be called We Exported Fun. That's the name of the game, isn't it?
It is. We came about it because we did a study and we found that over 75% of our customers travel over 70 miles, actually, to get to Perth. So whilst there is a local community and it has a feel of a kind of farmer's market about it, because a lot of local farmers will meet there on a race day, socialise and enjoy it, we are also literally supplying fun for people who can't come to live racing anywhere else north of the Firth and the Clyde. So we have Aberdonians, Inverness, from the Isles, and those that do love their jump racing do come up from Glasgow and Edinburgh. And a lot of people, like yourself, cross the border to sample what it's like to be at the most northerly racecourse.
And what, just from a business point of view, how catastrophic is it? You know, obviously the world is facing catastrophe anyway, or a very serious situation. So, and lots of businesses are facing serious situations. You know, people have talked, not about Perth Racecourse at all, but about racecourses possibly not even surviving all this. You know, will Perth survive okay?
I wish I could give you a category yes. I am increasingly confident that it will.
Did you ever think it might not?
Yeah, I was in absolute shock, Cornelius. It actually gets me quite emotional when you work back and remember what it was like when the full extent of the lockdown began to sink in, because you just do not expect to lose so many fixtures. And beside that, that's our working lives, is Perth. It's more than a working life, isn't it? Because it's your whole vocation when you manage a racecourse. It's more than a job. But there was also like what's happening with your own family, what's happening with society. It was such a melee of emotions all the way through. But for Perth itself, we had already, as you know, when Sam was there, he had some very exciting projects. We built grandstands, we built stables, we built a hotel. I've been trying to manage the hotel since. So there was a lot of expense. And we've been repaying loans over the last 5 years very, very aggressively. So when we were selling all these tickets that I was telling you about, we start selling in the October. As soon as racing finishes the last year, 2019, we were selling tickets. And we actually live off that cash through the winter. So we didn't have any when it came to refunding the hundreds of thousands that we sold, because we'd used it to repay loans. Some might say that's living by the seat of your pants. That was what we got used to doing, because we did not ever expect to lose so many fixtures. So it has been a short to medium term cash issue that we're trying to ride our way through. It's a very profitable business. Fortunately, we get better crowds than most because of the very good fixture list that we've managed to achieve over the years. So if we can just endure what is going to be a very messy 2 or 3 years, we'll be absolutely fine. But we have to have the support of our fantastic bank, an Irish outfit, Allied Irish, I will mention them.
Feel free.
They've been absolutely brilliant and they're giving us milestones to reach through the year. They can't commit to ever, because if they never have a mass gathering again, Perth will not survive. But we need to assume that the pandemic is going to behave itself, that the science is going to catch up and we're going to have drugs, vaccines to allow us to have mass gatherings again. And if we can all assume that, yeah.
And I suppose it's a frightening situation for a business, a single business like yours, but the bank presumably has got lots of people that so it's sort of used to being able to come up with potential solutions and to be helpful and to give you a bit of TLC.
Yeah, I mean we have a fantastic track record with them. So we are one of their we seem to be one of their favorites. We always seem to be top of the list. You're quite right. The bank managers are all absolutely flat out. So you have to queue to speak to them. You have to queue for an answer. It's been quite stressful, got a lot of strain on my colleague Morag, who's the finance manager. And I have a financial advisory group, which is beyond, over and above our normal committee for this particular year to navigate our way through it. Because racing accounts and cash flows are very different to most accounts. I've surrounded myself in the very best people, because everyone knows that the accountancy, well, I'm getting better. I know what deferred liabilities are now. So it's not my strongest point. I just like to promote and operate. So The financial side, I've had to get help from, not been too proud to do that. And hopefully we will get ourselves through that. And of course, there's also the levy board, who we've been repaying loans to, their understanding as well. And they work very hard with the BHA, the RCA, to make sure that it's that the whole industry can get through this the best it possibly can. But it's a competitive thing. So it's all our recovery will be relative to other racecourses. I think even when we do survive, hopefully we will survive. It's, for me, it's like I'm competitive and I want to know that my prize money at the festival can be as attractive to owners and trainers as it always has been, because we're at the end of the motorway. We always have to offer that little bit more to get them here. And if we can't do that, I just don't want to be second or third league, if you like, compared to where Perth has enjoyed being in the last 10 years or so.
At least your product, you're working on that side of the product, but the rest of the product, the actual Perth, the product which is Perth Racecourse and experience, that hopefully will be unchanged. Do you think, though, that people do talk about racecourses? There are 59, as I said earlier on, that maybe not, there won't be 59 when this is through. Do you think that's excessively gloomy? Or, you know, put Perth to one side as you just look at racing with your business head on and know what challenges people face?
Yeah, well, I think it would be at racing's peril to let any one of them go. I think you alluded to it at the start of your podcast here, that they're all very special. They all add something different. But I've been in racing for so long and I've seen the structure of racecourses change. So the Jockey Club have acquired a few more tracks. There's the ARC group as well. There's the small independents and the large independents. And all the financial revenue is very much based around those structures. And I think it would be unhealthy if you found in the end that all the racecourses were owned by one group or another and they lost their je ne sais quoi, their independence. I'm very, very proud that Perth is an independent track. And I think all five Scottish racecourses are. Having just said that, actually, there's only about 12 more days to go for Musselburgh, because, of course, they're joining the Chester group at the end of this month.
But that's a three-course group, which, you know, that's you won't get gloomy about a three-course group. It's the big conglomerates you don't want to be completely.
Yeah, it's a great outcome for Musselburgh, and that's just a management thing. They don't own the land or anything. That's still with the council. So I just think that the dynamic could change, and if there's any racecourse that's dropping off the edge, can't compete, then they'll be snapped up by one of the groups because they've got the resources to make the most of that and enjoy the fixtures that they'll acquire that way.
Because the fixtures, of course, the people who transmit the pictures pay on a fixture basis. I think that is something that racing has never entirely got to grips with. When a big organisation takes over a racecourse, those fixtures, in my opinion, should stay as much as possible what they were before and shouldn't be too jumbled around. I remember there being quite a hoo-ha. I mentioned Hereford Racecourse earlier on. When Hereford Racecourse was closed at one point, the fixtures were sort of distributed in a sort of slightly controversial way. But anyway, I'm sure the British Horse Racing Authority will keep an eye on that. You mentioned Musselburgh and the other Scottish racecourse at Kelso, Hamilton, where you worked very successfully for a long time, and Ayr. Are you all big mates, or are you all very competitive? I always wonder whether how that dynamic works.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. We've got to know each other very, very well since the March, middle of March lockdown, and how we were going to come out of it. We're all together on that one. We have regular Zoom calls. There's a lot of racing politics, as you know, over the funding. We're all planning just now operationally and how to do the racing behind closed doors completely compliantly. So we do share best practice, but there is always an element of competition. So it's interesting you say that. I'd say there's more working together than not. And the Scottish Racing umbrella has really, really helped with that, so that we can have a voice with the Scottish Government, with the BHA, who I must say have done an absolutely fantastic job to get racing where it is, started back so quickly and so successfully. I don't think anyone can criticise any part of the industry in how they've gone about adopting all these procedures and protocols to make sure that everybody, participants, racing staff, all stay safe and that we get the sport back on. It's been fantastic to watch.
And of course, they've had to deal with the UK government in terms of racing in England and Wales, and the Scottish government in relation to U5.
Yeah.
So that's added to the complication.
Yeah, well, all our procedures have got a little bit of a tartan spin on them, yeah. So to make sure that we're complying with everything that our First Minister wants, and at the same time, we've got the confidence in the BHA's protocols. So, yeah, it's been a finely balanced thing, and we're really happy with where we've got to, and air all set to go on Monday, which is brilliant.
And you, we were chatting the other day, you were saying that you've ridden on some of the Scottish racecourses. What have you? You've ridden in a race at Kelso.
Yeah, that was a charity race for the IGF.
Yeah, have you ridden at Ayr and Hamilton?
I have. Do you remember the colours for Mentors Anything? Do you remember Hugh O'Donnell?
I remember Hugh O'Donnell, yeah, who was a famous character.
I went down to Alan Bailey's yard in Cheshire to just get used to that horse, and I got taken off with, and Alan Bailey was saying to you, are you sure this is a good idea?
This was Mental As... What was that, in a charity race?
Yeah, Mental As Anything. He knows where the end of the gallop is, so he just took me there. I have no idea where the end of the gallop was.
So what did you ride Mental As Anything in?
I rode him in an amateur race at Hamilton.
So of the five Scottish racecourses, you've ridden at Hamilton, you've ridden at Kelso. Have you ridden at Ayr?
Yeah, I won a race there for Peter Saville and Mary Reevely on Keep Your Distance.
Musselburgh, have you ever ridden at Musselburgh?
No, I've worked a lot of horses there for point-to-points, but I've not ridden in a race there.
But what about Perth? You haven't ridden in a race at Perth?
No, so I think I've missed that chance, Cornelius.
Well, don't do yourself down, please. Don't. But obviously you'd relish the thought, because you've described the course as like a carpet, the grass is like a carpet.
That's what I keep saying to Donald. I'm walking it like every week just now, at least once a week. And I'm just saying, this makes you want to get on a horse. This really, really does. And the fences are all looking absolutely stunning. Obviously, the hurdles aren't up yet, but it's never looked so well. And Donald's just absolutely thrilled with it.
So Donald's the groundsman, is he?
Yeah, he's been there over 40 years. So if you want to know anything track-wise, you ask Donald.
Give him a full name check.
Donald Gow. Donald Gow. He lives on site, and it's his only job he's ever had. So.
As groundsman at Perth Racecourse. Gosh, that is saying something.
Yeah.
I bet he's keen to get it back on.
Yeah, he's got this saying, when we have these, as you're saying, it's very, very social nights. We have very many social nights with Donald, and if there's ever an argument about the going, you just need to ask Donald what it is. But he says, if no one believes, he talks about it, just ask the butcher in Scoon. He's got this great thing, just ask the butcher in Scoon, because obviously I know nothing. Only been here 40 years, so... you could name your next horse that, Cornelius, the butcher and Scoon.
I'll tell you what, I was looking through the history books. It's not as though... Perth's got a few entries in the history book as well. Not only was apparently the Jacobite Rebellion was planned at the races in Perth in 1740, whatever. In the late 1970s, John Joe Neill rode five winners one day at Perth this is almost the funniest part of the story. I think he broke the record for number of winners by a jockey. This is John Joe Neill, now training but then riding. And was it 125 or something like that? And everyone said, oh, John Joe's ridden 125 winners in a season. And now you see these guys riding many more.
When Richard Johnson became champion jockey for the first time, Perth was the biggest supplier of winners. But just going back to John Joe O'Neill, when I said I started my love affair with Perth as a child, he used to drive a Bedford lorry with a green cab, and that's what we had to bring our hunter chasers to Perth, and they used to park side by side. And when I met John Joe at Aintree about 20 years later, he said, have you still got the Bedford? And I said, well, we don't, but I bet you don't either. He said, no, but I always thought that's dudgeon lorry when he rolled up beside us, which was a nice thing that he could remember which lorry we drove. He'd be worried about gale warning, probably.
You being dudgeon and dudgeon by birth, and that's practically Scottish racing royalty. But anyway, and do you know Richard Dunwoody rode his last winner, had his last ride at Perth? Do you know that, in 1999?
I did not know that. That's fantastic.
I don't think he wanted that to be his... Well, in fact, I know he didn't want that to be his last day, because he rode two or three winners that day, and then he got a shoulder injury, and he was always determined to get back from the shoulder injury. But his doctor said no.
Did we give him the shoulder injury?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, you did, yeah. Or the ground did, anyway.
Oh, that is a sadness.
But anyway, it's not just... I just want to make the point that... Because before I knew about Perth, and I lived in the south of England, I thought it was somewhere miles away, and nothing much happened, and it was a gaff, as people used to say. But I must say that it certainly is no gaff. It's got plenty of narrative, plenty of good stories, and I hope plenty of great future as well, Hazel.
I certainly join you with that, Cornelius, and it might take us a while to come back. People will have to be understanding and patient. I'm just hoping when we do get back to some kind of normality, are allowed to have a crowd, that people will have really, really missed it, and it will be a bit of a boom time. That's what I'm counting on, because that's what my cash flow says.
And you said earlier on, it's at racing's peril to let any race courses go, because they're all individuals, and there's none more individual than the location in the Palace of Scone. You said when we set this all up, Hazel, it's quite a long time to be blethering, to use a great Scottish word. Well, we blethered away. The clock, I think, has caught up with us. Best of luck from, what's the date again? July the
21st. It's a Tuesday. It's a twilight meeting, so quite pleasant for the heat to have disappeared. We're starting racing at 4:40, nine races.
Oh, you've got nine races. Gosh. You've got all the blur ready. Good. Well, look, I hope that everyone has a chance. Everybody, not just the professionals working there, has the chance to come and watch and cheer on the horses very soon. And I must say, if you get the chance, if you can get to the last, on the inside of the racecourse, to the last obstacle, so you watch there and you feel the excitement of the horses being close, and you look up the course and you see the pack stands, and that's one of the great views in racing, in my opinion. Anyway, before I make a complete attempt to be given the freedom of the city of Perth and the freedom of the race course...
You've got it already.
But look, thanks very much indeed for joining us today, Hazel. And thank you to you for listening to the Cornelius Cast. And please feel free to subscribe, and then you'll always be kept in the picture when a new production, a new episode comes out. Anyway, we'll speak again soon. Thanks very much.